Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I am your host, Ryan Winder. And remember, what's happening in Vegas is not staying in Vegas, as I bring you helpful tips in all sorts of topic areas with a Vegas twist, of course. So let's get the show started. Welcome, welcome everybody. It's good to have you back in for another episode of The Vegas Therapist. I'm your host, Ryan Winder. I got a great show for you today. We're going to be doing part two of managing, dealing with, you know, confronting triggers, defense mechanisms, understanding those things or working through them. So part two is up for you today. Before I get to the topic, again, just want to check in with people. Hopefully you're having a good summer. You're getting to do some of the summer things you enjoy to do, whether it's camping, the beach, spending time with family, enjoying the sunshine, whatever it is. If you haven't got a chance to do it, hope you get to do it. Hope you get to spend some time doing some of the things you enjoy during the summer and not just grinding the whole summer and being able to enjoy some time doing some things that you like. On that note, I'm going to kind of just jump into things today because I want to kind of do a couple things, you know, a little bit prior to the actual topic. And I'm always trying to listen to different podcasts and, you know, and get insights from other people and try to understand myself better. And maybe even just come up with my own topic ideas as a result of listening to different podcasts. But I was listening to one recently and it just talked about how he felt like his show was successful because he just tried to be authentic and real and his true self. And I hope I try to do that. I hope I try to give you that sense, because I think to me this is a journey that we're all on together. You know, the things that I try to provide, the subjects, the topics are things that help me. You know, it's not like I've hit this point in my life where I'm good. I understand everything. I've got myself all figured out, and that's just not the case. So I definitely feel like we're on a journey together. And it's important for us to always continue to be learning. And so when I was listening to this other podcast, it was on reparenting yourself. And one of the things he talked about, which I wasn't expecting, was this notion of like, okay, when you think about your parents, what's something that you don't like about them? And then, which, you know, I mean, maybe that's easy to identify, but in those things that you don't like, what is the thing that you see within yourself that you don't like? And obviously that's a little bit harder of a quest or conversation with yourself to really dig in and to try to find that thing that you don't like about your parents, but you also see that in yourself. And the thing that first kind of hit me or came up with me is like, you know, as a result of my mom's experiences in life and her trauma and probably dealing with the fallout of some of my dad's behaviors, and he would go through money, he would, you know, rack up credit card bills or not pay bills or different things. And so I think she became very secure around her money and very like wanted to hold on to it tight and not let it go, and always felt like she needed to have more in her accounts and stuff, because I think there's just this fear of like it would be gone at one point, or there'd be a catastrophe and she'd have to use it. So which, you know, sad to say, I think maybe prevented her from maybe doing maybe more things to enjoy herself or to enjoy life, because of that, the fear of like losing that nest egg and things of that nature. And it got me thinking about myself. And now from the outside, it may not seem like that's a relatable thing as far as that goes. Cause I mean, you know, I enjoy going on trips with my family and, you know, we go on vacations, and whether it's to Hawaii or we go to baseball games at different places, we go to California. We definitely don't just sit home and you know, and hoard money. But I think the one thing where I connect with that is more on that scarcity dynamic, that maybe at one point things will all kind of just go away. You know, sometimes I'll find myself looking at my schedule and like looking a couple weeks out and thinking like, oh man, what if I didn't have any clients in 2 weeks? Or what happens if, like, you know, everybody just stops coming at one point or whatever. And so I've had that fear and that scarcity within myself. And that is something that, you know, I struggle with. And even though time after time after time, it gets proven wrong or everything works out or everything's okay, it still is a feeling that resides in me. So with that podcast and with that identification, it's something that I'm committed to improving on and doing better and not letting that scarcity or that fear keep me from just living life. And that doesn't necessarily mean like going out and spending whatever money. That's not really what it's about. It's just about more trusting in yourself and trusting that good things are going to come your way, trusting that life will work itself out and that, you know, the efforts that you put in today will benefit you tomorrow and things of that nature. So it's just living without that scarcity. So just wanted to share that with you. And again, just to let you know, we're all on a journey. We all have to experience and go through things. Things trigger us, you know, going back to the episode. And when they trigger us, we have to understand what that trigger is about. And then, you know, what's there for us to process. And that's kind of my last thought about the last episode as far as triggers goes, because we all are different. And, you know, in terms of like understanding how to work through a trigger, I just wanted to share this example with you because I didn't think about it last time. You know, I recently had a client that was having an extreme emotional reaction to a current situation that she was dealing with. And although the situation itself was emotional and painful and hurtful, it didn't really match with the level of like emotional reaction that, you know, that she was exuding. And so the whole time I'm validating her current feelings, but I'm also at the same time acknowledging that it felt like there was something more to this, that she was being triggered by more than like that she was being triggered, obviously, but that trigger was touching on more than just the current state of things, that it was touching something deeper with inside of her, you know, previous trauma, previous hurt, a previous pain. And so after some digging on her part, you know, this was after the session, she went to work on herself and tried to, you know, was exploring things. And when she was able to make a connection to a different trauma in her life, which basically just opened up this whole new avenue for her, made a huge difference in her perspective and outlook on things. And just because now she knew that connection were there, it helped bring some relief to the current state, but also, okay, now I can do what MC, the author of the book Unbroken, talks about, which is, okay, now I understand this original trauma and now there's more processing to do, and that processing can help me to lessen the triggers that I'm having in general in, you know, in life. And so I think a lot of times that's what, you know, what triggers are about. They touch on things that are unresolved in us. And sometimes those things are obvious. And sometimes we got to do some work to figure out what that is and make the connection. But then once we make the connection, then now we got some work to do. And I really think that that's the crux of it. So as we move into defense mechanisms, I guess what I thought was important about understanding defense mechanisms is just that defense mechanisms almost like are things that we do on the daily, where triggers kind of happen, you know, maybe from time to time, maybe they're daily, maybe they're weekly, maybe they're monthly, maybe they're once a year. It really just depends. It's hard to know, depending on our situations. But defense mechanisms are something that we can be stuck in and that kind of are that stay with us, that they're with us like on the daily. And so I think those are really important to understand. I mean, again, I think like triggers, some defense mechanisms only come up in certain situations, like maybe when we are triggered, that defense mechanism comes out. But like I said, some of them are a pattern or become like patterns of operating in our life. So that's why I think that they're important. In fact, Terrence Real says, you know, most of us do not even react the experience of the trauma itself, but what we do is we act out the coping strategies that have evolved in us that have helped us to deal with the original trauma that we've had. So that's kind of the nature of defense mechanisms, is that there are these coping strategies that we create to deal with the original trauma. So the specific defense mechanism or defense strategy that we incorporate, or the compensating part of us, is what Terrence Real refers to as the adaptive child. The adaptive child continues to repeat a dysfunctional stance in our lives, whether that's pursuing, withdrawing, avoiding, pleasing, complaining, and controlling. So now his term for it is adaptive child. that's the defense mechanism that he kind of looks at as a way of trying to understand yourself and understand your behaviors. So there's other forms of things that we're going to talk about, but I just wanted to start with this one because I find it really interesting as far as how he identifies your adaptive child response and what that is for you. And so this is something I'm going to put up on my Facebook page, the Vegas Therapist Podcast Facebook page. So I'll put this diagram up there so that you can see it and try to understand what your adaptive child is about. And basically what it comes down to is that, you know, he says our trauma occurs. We kind of learn this adaptive response in two ways. Either one, it's modeled to us. Or two, the other thing is it's in response to a trauma that we've experienced. And now one thing he says about the traumas that we experience, they happen in relationship to two different quadrants. The first quadrant being along the lines of either it's an abandonment or an intrusion. So either we feel abandoned or are abandoned or are walled off in some way from something, or we're intruded upon, or somebody like goes over top of our boundaries and does something intrusive in some way. And then the second quadrant is like this false empowerment, disempowerment quadrant. So we're either made to feel better than, or we're made to feel less than. So for example, a boundaryless/intrusive disempowerment might be some type of abuse, right? Because like a sexual abuse would be crossing somebody's boundaries and making them feel less than, or, you know, hurting them in a way that makes them feel bad about themselves. So that would be how you would track that. But then the other thing that he says though, so the adaptive child response, it's like, it's kind of done in complete opposite to the trauma. So an intrusion will tend to create walls or breed walls, whereas no walls or walls, if you've been abandoned or made to feel walled out or closed off, that tends to breed intrusion, because you tend to look for that attention or look for that, you know, you're kind of more needy because you've been, you know, basically told you're not good enough or you've been abandoned in some way. So anyway, it's kind of an interesting dynamic, and it's definitely been insightful for a lot of my clients to kind of figure out their adaptive child defense mechanism, I'll say, and try to understand it in relation to their trauma and how that adaptive response is still with them. And again, like anything, it's just like, you know, the awareness helps you to better manage it in the moment, because now you know what to look for and kind of what you do. And like I said, I'll put the diagram up on the website so you can kind of see it, or you can check out his book, Us. It's definitely something to look at. The second kind of defense mechanism I wanted to touch on was self-abandonment. Now, self-abandonment is something that begins automatically, often early in childhood, although I would say that I've seen cases of self-abandonment that start later on in life. And most importantly for us to understand is that self-abandonment, you know, happens under the guise that it's keeping us safe. Now, what is it keeping us safe from? Well, typically, if you look at self-abandonment, it's like it's somebody who is abandoning their own needs, their own desires, their own wants. Now, why would you abandon those things? Because by making yourself vulnerable and expressing your needs or your wants, or your desires, that puts you in a place for them to not get mad or somebody to reject you or something of that nature. And so obviously people stop doing that because they don't want to experience that hurt and pain anymore, and they move towards self-abandonment. Now, typically self-abandonment is seen in that way where people put the needs of others over their own. We stop speaking up for ourselves. We may believe, and this is another important part, we may believe our only value lies in what we can do for others. So we start to, you know, define ourselves by what we can do. That's obviously like a codependency thing, but we start to do that where, you know, we gain a sense of value for ourselves by what we can do for others. And as a part of our trauma or pain, we may also have come to believe that we don't deserve or feel that we have value in general. And so again, so because of that nature, we use this as a coping strategy or defense mechanism for our pain. Now, you know, process of healing then for that, First, we have to become aware of that's what we're doing. And I think one of the things in terms of the healing that I found with self-abandonment is that people have to deal with the obstacle of guilt. And really, it's guilt, it's not guilt, because ultimately, a lot of times people who've been stuck in this pattern, they feel guilty for putting themselves first, but that guilt is distorted because it's like most cases, they shouldn't really be feeling guilty about putting themselves first. But because they haven't done that for such a long time, it feels bad or it feels uncomfortable. It feels, you know, wrong almost to do that. And so coaching them through that and coaching yourself through that guilt / not guilt can be really difficult, because people also see it as, well, I don't want to be seen as a selfish person. I don't want to be seen in a bad light. But again, that balance of like taking care of your needs, doing things for yourself, and not just completely turning everything over to somebody else. So example of that, I've been working with a guy who definitely experienced trauma early on in life and was made to feel less than. That carried into his marriage. And he unfortunately was married to a spouse for 30 years, somebody who was very critical and would make him feel bad about the things that he did or didn't do perfectly. I mean, we're talking like go out, mow the lawn. And this guy's like meticulous about things anyway, but like, you know, go out, mow the lawn. And then, you know, she would critique how it wasn't good enough or whatever. And so definitely he began to self-abandon, or he was a self-abandoner. And yeah, I think it got worse in that marriage, to the point to where this was kind of the kicker for me was so they've been divorced about 4 or 5 years now, and he still will do things for her occasionally around her house. He's a handyman kind of guy, and he'll still do things for her. I feel like he feels like he owes it to her. He's got to make it up for her. Again, doesn't want to be seen as a bad guy, but tries to get value by being that good guy in some ways. But the kicker was he had a day off. He had a tee time to go golfing. She's on her way out of town with some friends going to have fun. And she gives him a call in the morning and says, hey, I need you to come over and get started on that project of like laying these pavers in my yard. So if you could come like right away and da 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 da, and the stuff's here and whatever. And mind you, she's not paying him for this either. It's just like basically the expectation that he's going to come do this. And so what does he do? He doesn't go golfing. He gets his stuff. He goes over and starts laying the pavers. He goes and buys some supplies, which he doesn't even ask for reimbursement for, and just basically spends his day off doing this project for his ex, who he has no obligation to other than just, you know, wants to be seen as a good guy and didn't. You know, I mean, even if he would have just said, hey, like, I'm going to go golfing and then I'm going to come back and I'll start working on it then. But that wasn't the case. So lots of work there for him to do. And again, he does feel guilty. He internalizes the guilt as being something bad that's telling him that he's wrong and bad for that. But like I've tried to help him with, is just like that guilt is not really guilt. It's just, it's more of a discomfort of you putting your needs first, because that's become so foreign to you that when you do it, you're going to have a visceral reaction to that. So that's self-abandonment. I also want to touch a little bit on self-blame and self-shame as defense mechanism defense mechanisms. One thing we use self-blame for blame is a way of obviously, it's of making sense and discharging pain. So that's what we use self-blame for. And according to the book, Shattered Assumptions, self-blame is used to maintain our worldview of reality or how we'd like to see things. So if we just blame ourselves rather than others or other things, obviously those things can't be held accountable, or the world can continue to operate in a way that we would like it. So what that looks like is that I might take on the responsibility, like women might take on the responsibility for being raped. And they might say, well, if I hadn't done this, if I hadn't walked down that street at night, or if I hadn't been wearing this, you know, sexy outfit, whatever it may be, they take on that self-blame themselves, as opposed to, well, no matter what, it's not okay to have somebody do that to you. But sometimes that's like an internal thing where they already have some level of shame, or maybe there's a part of them that doesn't want to see the world as a dangerous place. And so in order to keep that intact, they use self-blame as a way of, again, defending them, defending that belief or defending that way of thinking so that they can keep that intact. But obviously that's just hurting them. Shame, on the other hand, we hear a lot about shame. I think most of us have experienced shame. Well, I know most of us, all of us have experienced shame in some way. And at the core, shame is really just designed to keep us trapped in a negative identity of ourselves. And the more that we succumb to that identity, the less vulnerable we are, which then perpetuates our pain. And, you know, I think, you know, shame is definitely something that, like I said, we all understand and have heard about. And as far as, again, a defense mechanism, it's just really, it's easier sometimes to get into that pattern of just blaming ourselves and feeling not good enough and feeling like, you know, well, nothing good comes my way, or I'm just not good enough for anything. So as opposed to maybe, again, taking a risk, being vulnerable, doing something different, which that shame leads me into my next one, which is, you know, the defense mechanism of a victim mentality. Now, some of you may know people who are perpetual victims. That's how they operate. That's how they, you know, act towards anything that happens. And I think one thing that I read recently in the book Anxiety RX, when he talked about the victim mentality as a coping mechanism or as a defense mechanism, something I didn't really understand about. I thought it was more about not wanting to take ownership or responsibility, which it is, but there's a second part to it that's really important that I don't think most of us even realize, but it gives some empathy to the situation. But at the same time, not that that empathy still makes it okay, because it's still a defense mechanism. But he said in his book, Anxiety RX, a victim mentality forms when we blame everything on the outside for our problems. I think we all know that part of the definition. That's a pretty common definition for the victim mentality. Now, the second part is what struck me. So a victim mentality forms when we blame everything on the outside for our problems, and then shame ourselves on the inside. So even though we might think people are getting away with something by not taking ownership, they're really just like punishing themselves even more because they're shaming themselves on the inside. He also said it's also an attitude it's an attitude that we adopt when we shame ourselves for not being able to handle life. So that's another aspect of it that's, you know, I guess that goes into it, is that we feel less than, we feel like, you know, something happened to us that we can't manage or we can't handle. So we shame ourselves, but instead of like recognizing that in and of itself, we just kind of turn that outwards and then start blaming people as a way of trying to defend against the shame that we feel for not feeling like we can basically deal with life, you know? So it's really actually kind of sad. One, that people use the victim mentality as a way of, you know, not healing, but then also what it's actually doing to them as a result of that. And that's why I think he goes on to say, blaming and judgment can feel like a form of protection, but it really is the opposite. It's weakness. It's staying stuck in a situation. So we can move out of a victim mentality by realizing it's our ego that's trying to trick us out of taking responsibility for our own healing. Because that's really what it's doing. It's like, we're not healing as a result of being in that victim mentality. And ultimately, your ego that is in charge of these defense mechanisms does not want you to take any risks. It wants to keep you frozen. And obviously risks mean vulnerability, and we don't like vulnerability, especially when we're hurt or we've been traumatized or we've had pain. It's really hard for us to want to take risks, but this is a way that we can do that. So if you are somebody who resonates with the victim mentality, I think Not that it's an easy fix. Sometimes it's, again, it's just an automatic thing that we do. My suggestion would be initially to just stop when you feel like you're doing it and just say, hey, I'm blaming others and I'm shaming myself. And that remembrance, especially of the shaming myself, I think is really important, because it's something that, you know, I don't think any of us want to shame ourselves, but I don't know that we realize we're doing that when we, you know, are laying blame at others and staying in that victim mentality. So just stopping, hey, I'm blaming others and I'm shaming myself, and just trying to get out of that pattern of behavior. This next one, which I almost forgot about, which seems like it's very obvious, but it just kind of came to me yesterday, so I'm glad I didn't record it yesterday when I was thinking about it. But it's basically the defense mechanism of disconnection. And disconnection is really pretty simple. We just disconnect from the emotions around the events that have occurred in our lives, the trauma. And you remember, like, and I've said this before about the book Unbroken, you know, MC says that no emotion is not a sign of healing. Oftentimes, no emotion is a sign of disconnection, because we've put that away. We've told ourselves no big deal, or whatever, or that's not a problem for me, or that really wasn't that big of a trauma, or whatever it may be. We've done that, and so we've kind of disconnected ourselves from that. Now, some people might say, well, how do I know if I've disconnected from something? Well, glad that you asked, because that very thing came up for me yesterday. I was working with a client. We were talking about a trauma in his life, or something that he at least thought was a trauma, which was a trauma. And as we kind of were digging into it and actually even started doing some EMDR, it was interesting, because the initial thing was like, yeah, I remember myself being sad. I remember myself going home and crying about this thing and being able to, you know, and feeling really sad about it. But that was still like a description of the events. He wasn't necessarily connecting with the emotion of it. So then, you know, as EMDR goes, I said, okay, well, just notice that sadness, right? Notice that feeling. And we did another round of that. And then when it came back out, I was like, yep, got nothing. Okay, let's try it again. Yep, got nothing. And then you heard things like, well, you know, maybe it wasn't a big deal, or maybe it was whatever. And it's like, well, or maybe you're disconnected from that, you know, or you disconnected yourself from that pain and from that hurt. And then his question was the same thing. Well, how do I know I've disconnected? Well, you've just described to me in your own words something that you acknowledge was very painful in your life. And then when you try to feel about it, or try to feel that pain or feel that sadness, then nothing. And then you start to say, well, you know, maybe it wasn't a big deal, or maybe it really wasn't that much of a trauma, or I was just this or whatever. And you start justifying away. It's like, well, that's the disconnect, right? That's where you know that you're disconnected from something. And I mean, obviously we're working together, so that made it a little bit easier for him to maybe pick up on that or acknowledge that disconnect. But I mean, you know, I think sometimes when there's something that's glaringly painful in our lives and we have no emotion about it, I don't know, like MC said in her book Unbroken, I don't think that necessarily means that we're healed from it. It probably means that we have just tried to disconnect ourselves from that pain, and it's just in this corner. And it's going to take a little bit more work to get to that and try to, you know, work through that process, which, you know, obviously now we have a goal in our therapy to try to do, is to try to get that out. So a couple other defense mechanisms I just want to basically just kind of go through. There's the inability to receive, which is basically just that, like, we don't feel worthy of stuff. So when people give us compliments or stuff, we kind of just block ourselves from them. Because again, we don't want to make ourselves feel too good about something, because there's pain on the other side of that, or at least that's how we feel. There's defensive attachment, which is basically withdrawing from connection because you fear it will be taken away. And bottom line is that, you know, as we identify these triggers in our life, these defense mechanisms, you know, we can begin to then recognize more easily and begin to call them out, and then begin to do the work on the other side of it. Because really, that's the key in any of this, whether it's our triggers, whether it's our defense mechanisms, is that there's work on the other side of that. Once we get through that, once we identify it, then now we got to do the work. Now we got to heal that pain, or we got to change that behavior, or change that process, especially like with something like abandoning ourselves. We got to stop doing that and start honoring ourselves, our own desires, our own needs. So the identification is just the first part. So that's just what I wanted to try to make us more aware of is being aware of what triggers are what they can look like and how we identify them better. And then also the defense mechanisms that we use to keep ourselves safe from pain, but ultimately it's also keeping us from healing. So anyway, hope that's been helpful, and really look forward to continue on this path and this journey myself. And hopefully you are feeling the same about your own journey. And this is the Vagus Therapist signing off. Until next time.